The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAR on a Thursday with myself and Connor and Conan. The big news here, lads, is that Slocknail are out of the Derry Senior Football Championship, going for five in a row. Conan, you're our Derry club
correspondent.
Give us a lowdown on this. I can see Liam McGoldrick. Point deep into injury time, yeah. Break Slocknail hearts.
Fullback Liam McGoldrick.
Fullback.
Yeah, cursing himself as well for missing a chance earlier. He's very, very mobile. Like, he would have played for Derry a few times, and he'd bomb up the pitch stick from fullback, and if anybody drops, he's going to punish you, sort of thing. But right. Yeah, it sounded dramatic. Slocknail went 6 points up.
6-0 up.
Yeah. Coleraine just dragged himself back into the game. By all accounts, I haven't seen any highlights or anything yet, but by all accounts, it was a clinker of a match. You know, both teams, a lot of respect for each other, sort of going at it, both teams. They're both sort of attacking teams by nature anyway. Coleraine always known for goals. Like, they always just go for goals and goals and goals, and they always say that they would go for a point if the goal isn't on, sort of thing. But yeah, it's great to see. And like, they're the last team they wanted outside of Ballinderry and Slocknail. So Ballinderry did 3 in a row, Slocknail matched the record, which is 4 in a row by Blighy back in the 70s.
Right, so Slocknail were going for the out and out record. Yeah. Isn't it mad the way these records are hard to get?
And then Coleraine have come along and knocked them off their perch.
Colin McGoldrick scored 1-5. Liam McGoldrick got the winning point, as we just mentioned. Sean Leo is there, McGoldrick, as a lot of us would know. Barry McGoldrick and Kieran McGoldrick. There's five McGoldrick brothers, and their father's the manager.
Their father's been the manager since 2002.
That's what club football's all about, lads.
So this is, I think, his 16th or 17th year for Sean McGoldrick in charge of Coleraine, and like, they all love him. He's just like absolute gentleman. Like, if you talk about Owen Rea, the club, he is the one that comes to mind. I took a 16s team up to Coleraine one time, and he's managing the under 16s at the same time, and
right,
everything is sort of done in his image, and like, it's a great image they have. Like,
the ultimate club man. I'm going to root for Coleraine here for the rest of it. Are they a light club in Derry?
Oh yeah, they're so pure, like, and they're sort of out on their own a little bit, like, because like, Coleraine, there's a lot of unionist areas up around there, and like, this club takes in like Port Stewart and does
fighting
big,
against all those odds.
Yeah.
Like, this could be the new Slocknail, because we all loved Slocknail I didn't know about Slocknail until they started winning, and then we get learn all about their club, and like, I mean, going hurling and football, and all the young children are learning Irish, and it's just pure GAA club. So like, maybe there's more stories like that in Derry.
And Coleraine, big hurlers as well. They joined the Antrim League a few years ago. Like, they're playing intermediate this year, hurling in Derry. Like, so them and Slocknail sort of both going at it. That's why the game was fixed for this Wednesday night. It was supposed to be last week, but both of them had hurling commitments, so they agreed. A great club. They've only won it once before, 2010, but they'd probably be favourites now. Like, it's wide open because Ballinderry are out too, so they're playing Ballinascreen on Sunday, and Glenn and Lavie are playing before that as well. So the Derry Championship is
blown wide open. Yeah. It's blown wide open. Right, well, to move on from that, I'm calling this the least surprising news of the day, is Rory Gallagher and Turlough O'Brien are against the new football proposals. So Rory Gallagher is against the restriction of the hand pass, because let's be honest, it blows his game plan wide open. Anybody that's in competitive sport is in it because they want to be as competitive as they can. They shouldn't be penalised if they want to retain possession. See, this is the thing, maybe the B Championship will actually solve that, so you can be as competitive as you can without going to those lengths of defensive football against teams that are better than you. Maybe that's the fix. He says it's going to lead to more kicking the ball, which will lead to more collisions and more physicality and more one-on-one battles. How good does that sound?
I don't think Rory Gallagher meant to say that. That's a brilliant game.
This is selling this right to the whole country. Yeah. He said it's a 15-man sport that can be played anyway. It doesn't necessarily have to be one-on-one battles. If you're forced to kick the ball as regularly as that, I think it will reward physically more powerful and bigger players. I disagree. There's not a harder player to mark than a corner forward that's out in front all the time. Like, I mean, that's going to benefit them to get out in front. If anything, too many bodies around and hands getting on the little fella. Like, look at Tomás Corrigan, can't make the Fermanagh team. So, Rory, I absolutely don't agree with that. That's scaremongering. The defensive systems are doing away with the nippy corner forward, because you have to have some sort of size to be able to handle yourself in there.
Maybe the two Quigleys will make the team.
Yeah.
I did, like, it's funny. I do think though the hand pass thing was being used to get around them, so in a way I thought he wouldn't be too upset by it. You know, teams were hand passing because they had so many men back, but rather than me and you talking about it, I'd like to get Connor in on the act.
Yeah, so again, you're thinking of the defensive side when he's thinking of his he'll have no attacking game with these new rules.
I don't know what I can add. I thoroughly enjoyed your back and forth in the office, particularly yesterday before even starting the podcast. You have to look where Rory Gallagher is coming from, and I think, as you said, Turlough O'Brien as well, they flourish with a game plan that's not going to be conducive to these rules. But Rory, unfortunately, did the worst job of voicing his opposition to the rules because he just described the best game ever.
Collisions, one-on-one battles, man-to-man, well, kicking the ball.
I think like everybody in reaction to these rules has come up with something that it's their personal reaction to it as opposed to the reaction as a whole. So Rory Gallagher and Turlough O'Brien are thinking, how is this going to affect Fermanagh? How is this going to affect Carlow? Everyone else he mentioned in the podcast yesterday, people are thinking, this is anti-Dublin. And other people are like, oh, this is pro-Dublin. But the thing is, like, these measures were not brought in to, you know, to counteract anyone's style of play. They're brought in to influence the game,
trying
in a positive
to improve
manner.
The game, and encourage attacking.
But you can't blame them for looking after their own interests either.
No, absolutely not. And sometimes I wonder what's the point in even asking them. And I think actually, whoever was talking about Rory Gallagher, I think Turlough O'Brien was on Sky. You kind of know why you're ringing them because you know they're going to give out about it. Because, like, let's be honest. And I take Turlough O'Brien. Some of what, like, he says these are aggressive. I think the people making the rules, oh no, okay, that's nonsense. What he did say was that playing them during the league is really unfortunate because the league is really important competition to them. They've got up to Division 3, and let's be honest, these new rules blow Carlow's game plan out of like, they might as well trade in Stephen Poacher for a coach that knows how to coach attacking football. So from that point of view, I can completely see where Turlough is coming from, in that everything they've worked for in the last 2 years now has been ripped up, and now they land in Division 3. And the way, you know, they could be sitting ducks.
But like, he's a manager as well.
But
so
yeah, every other team in Division 3 is starting from scratch as well. Because let's be honest, everyone's playing that. Carlow are an extreme example. But like, I mean, the majority of teams are playing that get bodies back behind the ball game plan. So they all have to start from scratch.
But he is, like, he's a manager. So thinking about it, like, you know, this is taking things out of my hands now. You know, I know you'll say he has to adapt and play a different way. But he had a nice quote saying, they're telling you have to play a certain way. And it's that simple. 1940s, catch and kick, wear your flat cap. That was a nice quote.
No, I didn't like it.
But he should be allowed to do what he wants. You know, that's what he's thinking.
Well, he can within the new rules.
Like, yeah, I mean, but a new game sort of thing, essentially. Like,
there'll be a whole new set of tactics and game plans that will be made. So you're going to be forced to think of attacking game plans rather than defensive ones. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. That's what fans want to see.
Yeah,
but I thought it was a cheap shot to say 1940s catch and kick. I played in the late 90s, early 2000s, right? There was no 1940s catch and kick then. No, let me finish. There was none of that bullshit. That's 1940s. So I hate that. And I hate the way they try to wrestle it to the 1970s and 80s. And we've seen those games on TG4 or on TG Catter. And they're terrible as well. They're slow, and there is too much aimless kicking. The modern player is more sophisticated than that. So you're beyond your fourth hand pass, you get it. You're not going to just launch it down the field. Like, I mean, there'll be enough forwards, thankfully, up the other end, that you give a nice ball in front of the half forward line. He could lay it off to a runner, and then you're true on goals. Idea that lads are just going to launch it, sure, it's scaremongering of the highest order.
Yeah, but you're talking about 1990s. Like, this is almost 2020. Like, the game has naturally evolved, and they are sophisticated and they play a different way. And like Turlough O'Brien, as you said,
using too much hand passing, that's the point.
But in your view, like, people who are playing now and managing now think that that's okay.
Managing now, because they'll adopt any tactics to try and win a game. Supporters are not going to games. The attendances are down. Anyone I speak to, Conan, and I don't know what it's like from where you are, Gaelic football is shite now, is what they say. So, like, I mean, it's not
just me. But you saw the reaction to these rules as well, though. Like,
they're the same reaction to the mark. The same reaction to everything.
Like, people saying Gaelic football is shit, there's still loads going, there's still loads watching, there's still loads playing,
dropping,
more than ever.
Dropping. Now they're dropping. And I'll even talk to club players, and they don't enjoy it. Full forwards don't enjoy it. Tomás Corrigan doesn't enjoy it. The enjoyment is gone from an attacking sense. And this has taken that back a little bit. I don't think there can be anybody more objective than me looking at this, because I've no skin in the game. I love the game. I find it incredibly shit to watch these days, and I'd love to see more catching and kicking, which I think are the most skillful parts of the game.
But you played in a different era. Maybe that influences you a little bit.
Not really.
And a good era too.
Because I look back at the Leinster final in 2004, And I think, my God, how slow and ponderous was that, and how bad was the marking? And I don't look back on that thinking, my God, that was fantastic. I look back on that and think, look how much better it is now. But I just want to see more.
Because the game has come to such an advanced stage that it requires these rule changes to be... I think that's what the Rules Committee are getting at. That, like, because the game has come on so much in terms of fitness, in terms of the conditioning of the players, that to facilitate an attractive game now... It was easy to do it back then because the game was at a certain level and the players hadn't reached that level. Whereas now, because they are so fit and so conditioned, that you have to come up with these rules changes to facilitate something. But like I do sympathise where Tarek O'Brien is coming from. I'd just be interested to know whether himself and Rory Gallagher, if they were asked, and you can't do this because they are managing at the moment, but if they were to give their comments on the rules as a fan, I think they'd be different to what they are as a manager.
I think so. Now, obviously they'll use the excuse Maybe. And say Carlo fans don't care, but again, like, I mean, when you look at it, they won't care because they're getting competitive, but after a couple of years you will. Like, you see in Donegal, like, I mean, that was unbelievable, they won in All-Ireland, but then, like, there's a lot of people complaining even within Donegal at the time, like, Jesus, hard to watch stuff. But you'll give that a pass at the start, because, like, imagine being not competitive, suddenly you're competitive. That's not, you can't give an objective view. Like, supporters of those teams can't give an objective view either.
This is sort of where it comes back to the Donegal thing. At the time, people were questioning whether they should care about entertainment, and it's sort of almost getting back to that now, where you're saying he'll be forced to think of an attacking game plan. But he's a manager and he's thinking, I should be allowed to think of a defensive game plan, you know, because, like, every other sport in the world will allow you to be defensive, but this one won't.
But it will. You can still use your midfielders as sweepers.
It's, like, going to be tough now, though, when you're forced to have six up, like, you know. Whereas,
yeah, so two half forwards can drop to the midfielders and the midfielders can drop into sweeper role. You can still be defensive. You just can't be so brain dead defensive that you're bringing all your players back. And that's has to be a brilliant thing.
Yeah, like, I think that, I don't want to see that, but I'm just saying, like, you know, in most other events, you're allowed to sort of do this sort of thing, and as a manager, he's looking at that going, why can't I do this?
Say, for example, before the offside came in soccer, so, like, if that was a GA rule, to be like, what the hell is the meaning of this? This is bullshit. Yeah. So you're mind to tell me they
but
can
that
move,
was a tweet no, that they, wasn't
mean,
telling people
you
how to play
me, you mean to tell me their defence can move right up to the halfway line and we can't move in front? That's bullshit. Sure, of course it would. It'd be the same thing, because it's a big change in a game, but look how it improves it. Don't be scared of these things. That's the point I make, Conor. Don't be scared. I know you're scared right now. Just don't be scared. We'll get you through this. It's choppy waters right now, and we're out to the other side of it.
You were fine with the mark last year. You came around to that eventually.
Yeah, take your flat cap off, will you?
All right. Anthony Maher, lads, is retired. And, like, I mean, solid, big, good midfielder. But it wasn't just the news that Anthony Maher retired. Kieran Donaghy obviously retired. Donica Walsh retired. So there's a real changing of the guard down in Kerry. And I was just reading a piece that Maher's retirement means that just Darren O'Sullivan and Killian Young have more than one All-Ireland medal in the Kerry dressing room. So, like, I mean, just far gone how... Like, I mean, and that 2014 All-Ireland winning team, that wasn't a hugely fancy team. We talked about that before. Like, a lot of all Paul Geaney, James O'Donoghue, all Peter Crowley, all that age group would have been beaten well in under-21 finals by Cork. You know, now, not, they're obviously brilliant, brilliant players, but, like, I mean, it wasn't an era of players kind of coming through going, Jesus, wait till these lads come through. It was more like they turned into brilliant players. So, like, I mean... This really is, when people talk about Kerry and give him 2 or 3 years, you might need to give him 4 or 5 years before these 19, 20 year olds are 25, you know, 25 year olds and proper men that can take Dublin on in Croke Park.
Definitely. My first thought was like, Killian Young and Darren O'Sullivan and more than one All-Ireland medal. God love them. What are we doing now for players with just more than one All-Ireland medal? But I suppose, like, the new leaders, I think, in the Kerry team had started to emerge anyway, but, like, that's going to have to be fast-tracked now. They've no other choice. They're just going to have to step up. And, like, we've constantly talked for years about the Kerry minor teams, you know, the four in a row, and like the talent that's like inevitably going to come through. But, like, I think Kerry have been held up because Kerry have won five minors in a row. They've been held up as like, oh, if anyone's going to stop Dublin's dominance, it's going to be Kerry. But as you said, is that going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
When you look at kind of the age profile, and
they
when
need to be 25, 26. They need to be men. Yeah. And if the first year minors are 25, 26, and 26, 25, 24, 23, 22, that's a team that could potentially, but right now,
that's all
on James Horan.
That's an interesting, like, change of culture there, though, just O'Sullivan and Young now. Like, I remember interviewing Darren O'Sullivan a few years 2 years ago, and was it he won his fifth, maybe it was his fourth or fifth at the time, 2014, and he was saying, yeah, but you walk down the street in Kerry and everybody has five All-Irelands, and you know, everybody in that team had loads, and you're always just thinking about the next one. Now they've got a whole squad who've only most of them only tasted one or none, which is real change for Kerry. So it's going to be interesting to see how that affects them.
It is. It's nearly back to the 90s. There's some interesting GPA data stuff on the Irish Times. Eamon Donoghue, whose pieces every week are absolutely essential reading as far as I'm concerned, because I love a stat, and he's the stats man in the Irish Times and puts a lot of work into them. But he's talking about GPS data now, and I was wondering what angle to take on this, because, like, I mean, he's used Kevin Feely. I don't think all names could be actually released. So, like, I mean, he's released some of the names. So in the championship match this year, Kevin Feely covered 11.79 kilometres. His total sprinting distance, that's running at a high intensity, was 1,854 metres. He had a maximum speed of 8.5 metres per second and made a remarkable 106 overall sprints. That's beyond belief. So they're counting sprints anything faster than 16 kilometres per hour. So according to the studies carried out by Athlone Institute of Technology, the average distance covered by an intercounty footballer is 9.22 kilometres. The average sprinting distance is 1,731 metres. That's a lot of sprinting, lads. That's a lot of sprinting. And players on average are making 44 sprints and hitting a max speed of 8.41 metres per second. So, like, I mean, Kevin Feely did 106 sprints and the average is 44, like, which is beyond belief. Yeah. Like, and it's just like, I mean, Ronan McRory, who's the senior vice president for Catapult Sports, and they provide these GPS. So he's talking about GA championship distances per minute would normally be higher than any team in the Champions League. We find that GA teams would rank up there, if not exceed any other team sport, maybe barring Australian rules football. And the ball typically does more work in hurling than Gaelic football, but the gap is actually closing even in hurling now, because the half forward lines and midfielders are becoming much more not just stand in your position. But that's interesting. I've always said this, that Gaelic to the fitness levels for Gaelic football, because you never really get, the only time you get to stop is like a free kick on your team, because or else even during that some fella could be running over and back to field, and not, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Sometimes for kickouts now or anything, like they're out.
The kickouts are out, and that's something that's definitely wasn't in my time. You could get a breather at a kickout, even though someone could be moving, but now there's no breath. I remember the big change for that came to 2013 All-Ireland final between Dublin and Mayo. I'd never seen anything like this. That these
first
restarts
is crazy.
It was the fastest football I'd ever seen in my life, and I was looking down because I'd know Alan Dillon well, saying, "Jesus, Dillon will never keep this up." He was constantly running over and back to 45. But that was the first game that I saw where the restarts had just had, that game never really stopped. Yeah. It was incredible. But like, that's it. You just don't want to brag because this is a GA podcast, but like Gaelic football outside of Australian rules, you have to be fittest for it, and it's amateur and you're trying to get those fitness levels outside of your working hours. And this is where we're seeing in this ESRI report how many hours, 30 extra hours on top of your 40 hours work. Like, I mean, and that's it. It's just unbelievable stuff.
Just to put that into context, Kevin Feely did 106 sprints in a game. Man United players between them made 59 sprints against West Ham.
Between them. Maybe their criteria for a sprint might be different. We don't know.
Possibly, but even still, 15, that's nearly double it. And that's for 11 players. Yeah. Now, they were the lowest in the Premier League by a mile. Liverpool did 150, but Kevin Feely's nearly coming close to that in his own in 70 minutes, as opposed to Liverpool, a real whose intensity is, you know, talked up so much. Do you know what I mean? And Kevin Feely's nearly doing that himself. But that it's the intensity that impresses me the most, because while the figure of like kind of 9-10k that is impressive on its own, but like because there are no breaks in Gaelic football, you're kind of, even if you're just kind of wandering around, you're probably going to reach a figure like that. But if you put up 106 sprints, that's like what stands out to me when I hear these stats is the efficiency of them. Do you know what I mean? Like so Kevin Feely doing 106 sprints and sprinting for that amount of time. Like, I remember going back to soccer, I got to see Messi once in the flesh, and I'd say he moved about 3k during the whole game.
He walks, but when
he is involved, that's it. Soccer and rugby, like, they're probably the most comparable feed sports apart from Australian rules, but they're about short bursts of intensity for a short period of time. The rest of the time is kind of picking your moment.
Yeah.
Whereas Gaelic is just full on, or Gaelic football and hurling are just full on all the time.
Yeah.
So like a couple of years ago, there was these possibly well exaggerated figures of Jim O'Connor clocking 15k in an All Ireland semi final against Dublin. I'm not sure if that I'd say that's a bit off just looking at Kevin Feely's numbers, but that it kind of, we talked about the 2004 Leinster final later on. I doubt people were knocking up 106 sprints in 70 minutes back then.
No, definitely not. It's just the intensity was a lot lower back then. But then again, like, I mean, there was absolute complete zero. We thought it was intense, but obviously just taken on to a new level. Garrod McInerney in hurling. I don't think Garrod McInerney is probably the best example in hurling because he's your traditional centre back who might hold the middle a lot, you know, so he's not probably going to cover the ground. I'd like to see maybe Keane Lynch, Tom Morrissey, one of the Limerick half forwards, you know, they cover an awful lot of ground. But he covered 8.7 kilometres in one game and 9.6 in another. Hit a maximum speed of 8.51 meters per second and made 42 sprints. So, like, I mean, he's a pretty impressive player, but I don't think total distance covered would be a good one for him. But that's not what managers are looking for. So according to this, Ronan McRory, like, your strength and conditioning manager might want to see your total distance covered, but your manager might not be as interested in that. What your manager is often interested in is your high intensity runs and how you're able to maintain those. So your high intensity runs, are they falling off, or are you maintaining them right through to 70 minutes, or do you need extra work? And like, I've been told Dublin received this data during the game. Do you know what I mean? Whether they can
during the game.
Yeah, I've been told that. Now again, I don't want to throw that out there because obviously you don't ever hear any confirmation, but you can get this live data. His stats are, his GPS is dropping, right, and that'll influence your decision whether to take
Colin Boyle
off.
Wasn't it that was the most high profile one last year? Yeah. Colin Boyle kept getting taken off around 45 minutes,
even though he looked like he was playing well.
Yeah.
Like, how often is the ball in play? Like, it's about 40 minutes, isn't it, or something like that?
So yeah, if you only look half.
106 sprints from that's from Feely. That's 2.5 sprints a minute. That's non-stop.
Like, well, he'd be making sprints before the kick out comes. Do you get me? From a midfielder, so it might not
even
be
70 minutes is 1.5.
Yeah, it's still a lot of bloody sprints from Feely, which you wouldn't really. I Feely kind of a man that commands that middle of the field. You don't have him as a man that's doing that many sprints. This was obviously just one game. Maybe he was trying to impress Keane O'Neill or something.
That's the most, like, again, to talk about how great the GA is, but like, he's sprinting around, so he has to be fit, he has to be fast, but he's also powerful, he has to be strong, you know, to win the ball in
there.
Has
to get up there,
take a pass man with power, like, so he has to be all their work, never mind just be fit and running around.
Yeah, I'd love to see Fenton's stats. Obviously you'd never get Dublin's. I'd love to see Kilkenny's stats. You'd love to see any of the Dublin's. And one thing, I'd love seeing the Premier League, right? So they track the Premier League track the GPS themselves, so they have all that technology in all the stadiums that the Premier League has put it in there. So it's not individual teams that need to release that. So when Sky, say Gary Neville, one of the best pieces of analysis with Gary Neville was Suarez. So Gary Neville was talking about how Suarez, a bit like Messi, he had the least distance covered, but he had the most high intensity runs. And off the high intensity runs he made, so many things came up. So on Monday Night Football, he was able to base a brilliant piece of analysis off just the GPS information he had. Like, we don't have that in GAA. Yeah. You know, so your hands are tied. Like, the GAA, for me, should put in that technology in Croke Park and release that technology. It would really help, I think, you know what I mean? And that's not, then Dublin can't complain, Mayo can't complain, Kerry, this is the GAA's information.
Yeah. Such a protection, like, of information, though. Kerry don't want you knowing how
they don't,
you know,
they'd never give it out. They'd never give it out. But, like, I mean, none of the Premier League teams complain that their stats are out there and that's it, you know what I mean? They're just there, and pundits can use them, and it just adds to the product, I think, and adds to the level of analysis. But then again, in the GAA, we have no analysis shows, do we, on telly? So, like, at the end, there's no point in it. They don't even have, we're not losing out anything because there wasn't one bloody GAA show all this summer.
Would Lee King be given a sprint for when he threw his GPS at D-Rock?
Well, it would have moved pretty fast, maybe not a long enough distance. But anyways, we'll come back and we're going to talk to Paul Kinnerk.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat a heap of shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in there. I don't know, it was pure luck, no, in fairness. Pure luck. Fucking bullshit, as you've seen yourselves.
All right, delighted to say Paul Kinnerk joins us on the line now. Paul, this is about a 2-year search I've had to try and get you on the show, so I finally got you.
Yeah, I try and keep the head down, Colin. The players hear enough and see enough of me, so I'm happy enough to keep the head down in between that time.
Yeah. So this is actually an interesting interview in that you're the coach of both Clare and Limerick winning the All-Irelands in 2013 and this year. You're a football man, so you're fitting perfectly in now that we've combined the two podcasts together into football and hurling. So it's an interesting that your main background is football, even though you're such a renowned hurling coach.
Probably growing up along, I probably would have done both together, football and hurling, and then maybe... when I got just past minor, would have probably specialised then in football for the next few years. And I suppose it was just nearly by chance that I got involved in hurling coaching through my association with former Clare hurler Sean Stack. He was involved there with Six Mile Bridge when I was teaching, and I was injured, so kind of started from there. But I would have had an interest in coaching, having the PE background and that. And I still would have played hurling up to minor, I would say, with the county, and then I would have played senior with my club Mount Lean. So it wasn't that I was coming completely in out of with no background in hurling. It's just football definitely would have probably taken first preference up along,
Okay, so you had minor county hurling background, because I was wondering how the hurling snobs would have accepted you if you had no hurling background. So you'd be a bit like me on this podcast trying to talk and people just not listening to a thing that you say. So that was it. So then you got in with Six Mile Bridge, and then obviously did well with them and got in with the Clare Minors, and you got on the Clare kind of roller coaster ride then with the under 21s, 3 in a row, and then a senior All-Ireland.
So it just so happened that I had probably a spate of injuries there between 21 and 24, and just fell into the coaching through that. And around 2010, I was coming back from injury, and I was back on the Limerick football panel then at that stage. And I probably had to, I was 25 at that stage, and I had a decision probably to make whether I could, concentrate on the football slowly or the coaching side of things. But thankfully, the manager at the time, Morris Horan, was very facilitating towards it, and we just, it worked from there. And as things went, he got involved with a really special group, and it was tough to leave it. So I just managed, I suppose, football and coaching for those few years up to 2013 or 14.
So I was reading, if Morris had given you an ultimatum back then when you're 25, listen, you don't have time to do both. You were going to concentrate on your intercounty football career, and the hurling was there. The hurling might never have happened.
Yeah, I saw he tweeted that this week. so there was a bit of crack with that, but it's a fair summary. I wasn't prepared to pack in my playing days at 25 anyway. No. But the way things worked, and there's good people around me that helps in the journey.
So had you done any coaching then? So you wouldn't really, you're a PE teacher, so that would have been your involvement in, kind of group sessions and stuff before the Six Mile Bridge thing and the hurlers. The hurlers was your first kind of experiment with coaching.
I'd say, So it was, you were kind of going in, I suppose, experimenting and really, green into the whole thing. I would have had great exposure to good coaches up along. That definitely would have helped form my, I suppose, philosophy, if you like. And also having the PE background is, a really good stepping stone and insight from, the pedagogical learning side of things. So, I definitely had some good help, I suppose, going into it, even though the stuff you were doing back then, but you'd nearly cringe at thinking of it now, 10 years later. So that's all part of it, isn't it?
It's evolving and changing all the time. So this is the thing, and I find it interesting, so because there's a lot of confusion I often find within the GEA about coaching and about management and about a trainer and about a strength and conditioning coach. Sometimes it's all jumbled in together, and for me, the main model in GAA is you have your manager, then you have a physical trainer, and the physical trainer might cross between getting you fit and sticking out a few bollards and a few kicking drills and this kind of thing. And actually having defined coaches is just something that's new that's coming into the game. Would that be fair?
Yeah, it's probably fair. It's not something now I've probably given a huge amount of thought to, but I think what you probably have now, Cullum, is you know, it's a much more integrated approach than what it might have been you know, previously. I think your components of, you know, fitness, skill, you know, tactics are now becoming, you know, more of a combined effort, and they have to be with the time that you're limited with players at the moment. So obviously in your professional setups such as soccer and rugby, they obviously have the freedom to juggle it a bit easier and maybe separate those components. But I, from a GAA perspective, I think the model anyway at the moment is probably that you have a more integrated approach where those components are merged.
Right. Okay. So your coaching is called, like, you have a game based coaching style. So would you be able to explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so I suppose, look, in very, very simple terms, it's probably the use and design of activities where players have opposition and have to make decisions, you know, and where you're designing particular activities that are going to pose tactical problems. And within that, you probably have your development of fitness and your development of skill as being included within that process.
Okay, so like, you'll design, so based on what tactical issues that are going on within the team, you'll be able to design drills to be able to practice this and talk these things through. Is that right?
Yeah. Look, I think it's probably, you know, each team probably has their principles or their game plan, and then you have the opposition game plan and the opposition principles that you take into effect or take into account, and that's probably all included in the design process, you know, along with, obviously, you know, the rest of the management team and their thoughts within it as well. So I think that they're probably the main factors that you look at.
Okay, so like, does John Kiely go to you at the start of the year and say, this is the way I want to play, and then you have to work with what he wants, or is this kind of a group decision based on, you know, all of your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's very much a group decision, Colin. I think you've got, you know, we're very lucky in our management team to have really good guys, and, you know, like, that goes from, you know, John to Shawnee O'Donnell, our video man, who's brilliant at what he does, and then to our selectors, you know, John, Brian, Alan, Jimmy and Joe as well. So, and the players are included in it as well. I mean, I don't think you can design a plan or design a process without the most important people within that process being included in it, in the decision making. So I think it all factors around that, and I think, you know, most coaching setups, most management teams this day probably operate with a similar philosophy, I'd imagine.
Yeah. So I'm just actually, because I remember Kyle Hayes said something to me after the All Ireland, and it's always something when you watch Limerick and their half forward line. Like, I mean, they drop, but they don't drop far enough that they're not kind of a threat, you know. So the half back line, we talk about it on the podcast all the time, the opposition half back line has a decision to make, and usually they get sucked out because they're never going too far. Like what Kyle says, we always try to be in an area where we could potentially score from. So I remember against Clare in the championship, Clare kept their defenders kind of back and kind of messed up your game plan a little bit in Ennis. And I'm just wondering, was it after that game you started maybe telling them not to go too far, or, you know, are these conversations that are had?
I think when you're going to come up against a number of teams where you know, throughout the year, where you're not going to be able to execute maybe your plan as efficiently and effectively as you'd like, I would say, you know, that day, Clare absolutely you know, bossed us in a number of departments. You know, it wasn't just one tactical issue, but it's something. Of course, look, you reflect on after games, the level of analysis that goes into it now is at an all time high. So I think there's probably a number of different factors that you probably look at. It's not just one anyway.
Right, so like, I mean, as part of the Limerick management team, you're obviously down on the sideline as well, and you get a little bit animated from time to time as well. Like, I mean, have you input into substitutions? Like, would you be coach selector? I'm just wondering what your full title is.
Yeah, I suppose coach selector is probably the title. I think, you know, most of our, as I said, there's a joint effort in our management team. So I think everyone, you know, that's there probably has selection duties and that. But trying to get the balance right of being involved and making, I suppose, cool decisions is something that you're always still working on. You know, there's definitely times throughout the year that probably was more animated than I'd like to have been, but all part of the learning process, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is your own county, I suppose. Like, people, I thought you were from Clare, to be honest, because every time I heard your name, it was associated with Clare. And, I mean, obviously Limerick, so it's fair to say it was more special that it was your own county winning in All-Ireland.
Look, it's an interesting dynamic for me, because my parents would be from Clare, and we would have actually moved out to Clare when I was 15 from Limerick. So, you know, there is a dynamic there. So I'd have a huge association with Clare, but obviously, you know, to win with the county as well, that where your club is from, where you've gone to school all along, is incredibly special as well. So just lucky to be involved in both setups, really, Colin, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely. Camir, you mentioned about having the time to be able to incorporate everything, so you kind of have joined up training sessions where you'll do a little bit of everything in them. But does that frustrate you as a coach, that you might not have that one-on-one time to improve maybe technique or skills? Or do you have to wait until a Saturday or Sunday morning when you have a bit of light to be able to maybe pair off with a few lads and talk to them on a more individual basis?
Yeah, look, it's definitely one of the challenges at the moment. Like, when I say integrated, I suppose our strength and conditioning coach, Joe O'Connor, would, you know, very much be of the opinion that, you know, fitness can be achieved, and that those markers and criteria that he'd look for can be achieved through a hurling context. So
right.
So we would look at that, but on a one-to-one level, it's something that I'd love opportunity to do more. You try and factor it in, but, you know, just given the time demands, it's definitely a challenge at the moment.
So I remember, like, I would have played intercounty for a lot of years, and I played wing back, always facing the play, then I played wing forward, and then I went into the full forward line, and I had serious problems getting the ball with my back to goal, turning and shooting. And I've never had I've never had a manager or coach ever pull me aside and tell me what I might be doing wrong, or is my balance off. Like, I think there's a serious lack of people who are of expertise in that kind of area, or maybe some managers don't have the confidence to tell an intercounty player what they're doing wrong.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I'm sure, you know, you try and identify, as a management anyway, we try and identify certain aspects that we feel a player might be able to get an extra, you know, percent on. I'm sure, you know, there's plenty of points that we miss as well, but it's definitely an area of improvement, I'd say, within every management team, definitely including ours as well. But you're right, I think the individual one-to-one coaching is something that could definitely be looked at in more detail. But again, it is a challenge with the time that you have with a county team these days. You know, it's 2 hours or whatever, an hour and 40 minutes. You know, twice a week for trainings, and then a game at the weekend. You know,
Yeah, so there's just not the time in the day. Come here, at what point during the year? There's so many similarities between the Clare All-Ireland win and the Limerick one. You know, the age profile, not winning the provincial, but coming kind of through under the radar towards the end. Like, did you kind of come across a point in the season where you're going, Jesus, this is very, very similar?
Yeah, it's like momentum is such a powerful thing in sport and elite sport. I think in both those circumstances of Clare's on Ireland win and Limerick's, they were probably common factors between both. So I suppose, look, this year we got on a run from the Munster League, that's probably, you know, peaked nearly in the league up in against Galway. So, you know, this is like, it's probably in some ways a very important moment for us, that that we hadn't achieved, or Limerick hadn't achieved promotion in whatever it is, 9 or 10 years. So that was significant, I think, to do that, even if it was just the league. But it definitely allows to bring momentum into championship, I think. And we kind of took it from there. Obviously had a speed bump with the Clare loss, but I think that might have been timely as well.
Yeah, maybe exactly when you needed it. Come here, you're doing a study. You've left teaching. You're on a break from teaching to go back studying, yeah. And you're doing a PhD, and you're completing a study with 12 inter-county football managers and their approach to coaching. Can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, so there's probably two aspects maybe to my research. The first is I'm investigating what's actually currently taking place at inter-county level in Gaelic football, from a coaching practice point of view or a coaching pedagogy point of view. So that involves a national survey of all coaches. Or managers, if you like, that have coaching responsibilities, and then one part of it was we focus in on 12 senior inter-county coaches / managers for in-depth interviews with them. The reason being behind football, obviously, with my involvement in hurling, there's conflict of interest there, so
right.
I probably wouldn't be getting
no you wouldn't
but it's very enjoyable with Cunningham. It's great to go and meet these people that are, you know, extremely passionate and knowledgeable in their area. And you know, it's probably something that doesn't really take place in the GAA coaching community, especially at elite level, where you actually have two people from, you know, different counties sit down and have a chat, really, and be completely open about what they're doing and, you know, the challenges, benefits, all of that involved. So, you know, that's really interesting. So that's the first study, if you like. And then the second one is where we're investigating then the effects of a particular approach, a game-based approach, on game performance. So that's your skill execution and decision-making. So we're looking at that and seeing, first of all, trying to measure decision making and skill execution. That's one aspect of it. And then obviously there's the learning point of view as well. Seeing, you know, does this particular approach enhance or disimprove the player's skill set and their decision making? So, you know, it's very exciting, and you know, very lucky to be involved in it, really.
Yeah, without naming any names, obviously you won't be doing that, but like, I mean, do you find that at inter-county level there is still the situation where you do your long distance running, you don't see the ball for 3 months, so like, I mean, it's not really using, you obviously mentioned your strength and conditioning coach likes to incorporate everything, which makes absolute sense, it's more efficient with time, but some inter-county setups you won't see the ball for 3 months. Then when you see the ball, you could be just doing these kind of routine drills that don't really have any point to it, and then you go out and play a game and you might talk about things, and they're just not, you know, joining everything up together like it seems Limerick have.
I think the coaches that I was lucky to have involved anyway, they weren't reporting engaging in that type of a practice or right. approach. Now, of course, they could have been lying to me now, but I couldn't think that either.
It's a long time since I've been in the game, I suppose. I'm turning into an old, yeah. old man here.
I think anyway that most coaches are probably educated enough at the moment that they're seeing that you can have an integrated approach, and they're using a combined arsenal of activities really to include within sessions. And I just don't. I think even with the way the league structures are at the moment, and the importance that league has taken in football as well, especially for your Division 4, 3, 2 counties like that. That you really can't afford not to be engaged in football practice really from the off. I think it's something that football needs to be included in it, because you've got league games starting at the end of January these days. So
I was reading that you were being asked there during the week about management, and you said that if you went into management you'd have to sacrifice coaching, and you obviously really like the coaching. Is it not something that can be done? You can't double job. I know Jim McGuinness did it, obviously he did a lot of the coaching himself, but that was 2011 and 12. Like, I mean, is that day even gone now 5 years later?
I can only speak for myself, I suppose, but I just see the amount of work that John puts in, and my conversations with him on a daily basis would be frequent, and that's only one person that he has to deal with, or one aspect. So look, I spend a lot of time from a design point of view and an analysis point of view and all of that I think something would have to be sacrificed. And anyway, the coaching side of things is really where I feel most passionate about, and where I'm happiest anyway at the moment. So I mean, who's to say many years down the line what will happen, but definitely for now I'm quite content where I am.
Okay, so there's no management in the near future. Just quickly before I let you go, it must be very challenging to be making training different all the time. Like, I mean, not just making it different, but relating what you're doing in training to what happened in the game. How much time you have all day Monday and until training Tuesday before you go out in the field, I presume, to design your training session?
Yeah, well, look, we have great help in it with the management team, and as I said, the video man Sean McDonald that's there as well to assist me in it. I don't think you need to change. It doesn't need to be a completely different game each week or session plan. I think as long as you're really focusing in on the principles of your play and I think that's quite achievable and effective.
All right. Well, listen, Paul, I've taken up enough of your time, but it was 2 years I was waiting, so I got over 20 minutes out of there. Thanks very much for taking the call, Paul.
No bother, Colin. Take it easy. Mind yourself.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
Alright lads, county final time. So we're in that time of the year, so there's plenty of county finals this weekend. It's not box office weekend of county finals, but it's okay, it'll do us. And this is kind of just, I know the Dublin club semi-finals are next week and the Kerry club semi-finals, so we're getting towards big semi-final final stage.
Mayo's
so
that's this weekend actually as well.
Mayo's so semi-finals
this
next weekend.
This weekend coming.
This weekend, right, okay. So who's in them?
Caspar Bontubber, Brafey Balladrine.
Briefly Balladreen, right, okay. Yeah. So they're two really big games then, right?
Yeah, yeah, Caspar are strong favourites, but Ballintober have been close enough to them the last couple of years. So I know they've got Saturday night Mickeal Park. So.
Right, okay. So that's something to look forward to. In the county final stuff, the big hurling county finals, Abbeyside play Ballygunner. That's the Waterford county final. That's in Fraher Field at 3:30. Ballygunner going for 5 in a row. Abbeyside don't have any huge star names that I can see, an under 21 or two. So you'd imagine Ballygunner are big favourites there. Big final in Offaly hurling is Cooldairy versus Carmacolahy. Kilcarmacolahy in O'Connor Park at 4 o'clock. So, like, I mean, Kilcarmacolahy are defending champions. They've won 7 of the last 8 county titles. Cooldairy are the record title holder. That's probably as big as it gets. Well, outside of Burr, St. Rhinas are good there as well, but on the last evidence of the last maybe 5 years, that's a really big game. Laois Senior Hurling County Finals, Camras versus Rathdowney Earl, another really big one in Laois. That's at 4 o'clock. So both of these clubs, Rathdowney joined with Earl, obviously, they've both got 25 titles each, which is a record. That's Rathdowney added to Earl's. Camras are the defending champions. Wait till you see this. I was just looking at this. So Rathdowney won it in 2006. The last time Rathdowney won it was 2014, they hammered Camras. So Camras obviously going to have to have a little bit of revenge for that. But Rathdowney won it in 2006. They didn't get back to the final in 2007. Then they won it in 2008. They didn't get back to the final in 2009. Then they won it in 2010. They didn't get back to the final in 2011. They won it in 2012, took a year off, 2013. 2014, they won it again. And then they can get back to the final in 2015. So they're taking, like, we know Tyrone were a year on, year off yeah. in the football. This has taken the pace completely. Then they got back into the final in 2016, were beaten after a replay. Don't get to the final in 2017, and now they're back in the final in 2018. Rathdowney are just there. We'll take it easy 1 year. We'll give it a push the next year, Rathdowney Earl. So, like, I mean, that's a huge game in Laois Hurling as well. And in fairness, Laois Hurling County Finals are generally pretty entertaining. Meath Senior Hurling Championship Final, Kiltale versus Trim. That's in Park Talton at 3:30 on Sunday. And the Roscommon Hurling Final, At League versus Four Roads, can't say, and that's in At League, right? Okay, so that's a home venue for At League. So get At League out of At League. That's what I
At League or nowhere.
This is a joke. This At League, like, that's it. That home support's worth 2 or 3 points straight away. So there's only two county football finals: Longford Championship Final, Abilara versus Mullnahocta. That's in Pierce Park at 4 o'clock. Pretty high standard in Longford senior football. I know when Portlaoise play them, they never get it their own way. So, like, I mean, Portlaoise obviously a good club team. Mullnahocta are going for 3 in a row. So Abilara have lost the last 3 finals, all lost each one of them by 3 points. So big news for Abilara is that Robbie Smith, inter-county top-notch corner forward, he's out. So, like, I mean, he got injured in the quarter-final back in the 19th of August. So the manager has come out and told Shannon Side Sport that he's out.
So
straight away I thought
he's in.
I thought that was telling me Robbie's going to be back, and they're playing silly beggars here. So I'm not sure what Robbie Smith's injury is, but the fact his manager is completely ruling him out the week of the game is making me think here this is complete mind games in the lead up to it.
There's one change to the official match program.
Right, but the match we want to concentrate on is the Monaghan County Final between Ballybay and Scotstown. That's in Clonus at 3:30. Delighted to say that Ryan Wiley joins us on the line to help us look ahead to this one. Ryan, how's it going?
All good.
Come here. Kieran Hughes gave me your number, and he gave it to me there 2 days ago, and he asked me to ask you who you're man marking at the weekend there.
I'll be on Kieran, tell him.
I'll get it out.
I've plenty of Dorton, so all good.
Come here. So the main reason I'm ringing you is we're in club season and you have a huge county final this weekend. You've got the kind of unenviable task of stopping Scotstown going for 4 in a row.
It's not going to be an easy task. The last 5 years, I think we've come up against it now, and we've failed on every occasion. So it's going to be another tough one, but hopefully get over the line and give them a good rattle. But it's going to be another tough game, and hopefully get the win.
Yeah, because you won the county title in 2012, I was looking at there, and you haven't been back to a final since. So just wondering why that is. I know it is a competitive championship.
I'd love to know, Colin, because 2012, I was on the team when I was 18, and it was my second year on it. The first year I got to the semi-final, the second year I got to the final and won it, and I was like, Jesus, this is grand. It's going to happen every year. I'm going to like this senior championship football. And then lost the semi-final the following year. So since that, I think we lost 5 semi-finals. We didn't make in 2015, I think. So we lost the semi-finals. We're getting consistently, but just couldn't seem to get over that final hurdle. I don't know if we just thought it may be too easy to get back where we were, and it just wasn't going to be like that. And I suppose we just met better teams on certain days, like Scotstown and Clontibret in the business. But as I say, when I was 18 in 2012, I thought I was going to win them every year, but unfortunately that's not the case. I quickly learned that.
Yeah, it's a weird one, the way it works out. You mentioned you didn't make the semi-final in 2015. You went to 3 games with Clontibret and ended up losing the 3rd game, Kieran McManus's club.
Yeah. That was a tight battle in all right. I took a lot out of both teams because they then subsequently lost the semi-final as well. So I don't know if it had any bearing, but
yeah.
There's 3 tough battles, in fairness.
But yeah, because the reason I mentioned that is because they were defending champions that year. They won it in 2014, so you've been right in the mix. You know, like, I mean, you've been.
Yeah, we haven't been far away. In fairness, I suppose a couple of semi-finals and stuff. We might have got a bit of a trimming and stuff, but by and large, we've been thereabouts. I wouldn't say we've been millimetres away. In the last couple of years, we won a few league titles, and I suppose the way the league is in Monaghan, that's sort of competitive enough. So. A club like Ballybade, if we haven't maybe had much success, maybe a lot of clubs might snub it. But you know, with that much silverware, you're not gonna throw your eyes up at anything that'll come our way. So I suppose it gives us a night in the pub. So we're not complaining at that.
Yeah, well, that's true. Right. So I was looking through your team. Like, I mean, you have a good team. You've got inter-county experience right throughout the team. You've got 2 Wileys on the full back line. Now, that's not Drew and yourself. That's yourself and another brother, Brent. Drew is centre back, and then you have Thomas Kerr in midfield, and Christopher McGuinness and Paul Finlay up front. So, like, I mean, you've got a nice balance of inter-county.
And then there's Desi Ward there as well.
Oh, Desi Ward as well.
So, and then we've a lot of players now have tasted county, sort of they've been there thereabouts, and I suppose a bit of experience, and a few new lads are coming in. Colin Lennon there was on the 20s now, on the 20s. So it's always a good mix, but I suppose a lot of top teams in Monaghan, I suppose we have that mix. But it's always a good solid team there, and I suppose it sort of shows in the last couple of years they've been thereabouts. But it's just, there's no point having all these players if we can't get the win, and ultimately that's what it's all about.
Yeah, come here, is Brent younger, or are we expecting another Wiley up in Monaghan?
He's in between myself and Drew.
Right, okay.
And then there's an older brother and sister, but the older brother doesn't play at all. So
he doesn't at all,
he's a black sheep.
he's in the other room when you're talking about football. Because Pierce Brothers Bally Base, or Jesus Christ, I completely got a brain freeze. You won a county title in 1987, then didn't win it for another 25 years, which is interesting enough. But in that 25 years, the club disappeared down to junior football and then just built back up and got back senior just about the time when you would be coming up towards the senior level.
I just started, So there's a couple of players have the full lot at the junior, the intermediate, and the senior medal. So I don't know if that's a good stat or a bad stat. I'll leave that up to yourself. But I'd say to prefer another senior championship medal or maybe a junior and intermediate. But I suppose that's just where the club was at, unfortunately, in the 90s. So they just a couple of runs defeats and just couldn't shake it off and ended up down in junior. But I suppose whoever was there, time fair play for keeping at it, because I suppose you see some teams are down there at the minute and they might feel themselves they might be there to be in junior or intermediate, but it just shows it's not easy to back out of them. So thankfully I've been playing senior football since I've started, so hopefully for the foreseeable future that's the way it's going to remain.
Yeah, how's Paul Finlay playing, by the way, swinging him over at club level? I'm sure.
He's a good man to have in your team, that's all. He's deadly now, in fairness. He's unbelievable. There's no other words to describe it, to be honest. A free 20 yard or 30, 40 yards out either side, you can just nearly relax and sort of know that more than likely you're going to be getting a score out of it. And even coming out of defence there, he's nearly always an option, and you're just very safe when you know you're giving him the ball, because you know there's going to be great use out of it, or he'll get a score himself, or he'll deliver himself. But some of his passes in the last couple of years and points tonight taken and goal taken has just been unbelievable. It's just a pleasure to play with him.
Yeah, no, definitely. Come here, looking back at Monaghan's year, Ryan, how do you look at it when you look back? Because you didn't win an Ulster, you didn't get to an All-Ireland final, but you still had a really good year. So I'm just wondering what.
It's just one of those years that one hour you think, well, geez, that was a great year. And yeah. You go have a cup of tea, and then you start thinking in the morning, and be fuck it. It wasn't a good year, but that's just the way. That, I don't really know what way. To be honest, I'm not trying to avoid the question. It's just you look at the two spectrums. You know, we didn't win it, and then ultimately like, we got knocked out of Ulster, and we said here we get back into Super 8, and we'll assess from there. And we got back to the Super 8, and we got through it, and we were saying, well, we'll give this a right go, and. Unfortunately, we thrown better than the day, and I suppose they've been to a couple of semi-finals and just got one over. So maybe just a bit of juice and the know-how of how to get over the line, and maybe just a few bad calls on our part. But unfortunately, it wasn't a B. But we'll be back. But I suppose the Fermanagh game is very disappointing as well, especially after a good win against Tyrone, and just we didn't sort of play to what we could, and Fermanagh just stifled us and. Probably deserved to win in the day as well.
Yeah, and the same thing happened last year against Down, when Down were given no chance against you, and it was maybe a little concentration thing, which you kind of, when you get over a good win.
Yeah, I suppose it's happened twice now, so there definitely has been something there. And I suppose we talked about, oh, we can't be complacent and all, but maybe the more you talk about it, the more it actually does seep into your head. So I can't really put a finger point it, because it's happened 2 years in a row, and there's no real excuse for it. As you say, just maybe concentration or something after a big win, just wise in their own mindset, might be just sort of, you know, comfortable or something. It's hard to know, but I suppose we reacted well from that Fermanagh defeat. I suppose we didn't have the toughest of games in the qualifiers, but it's still a good way to get back.
Yeah, you got a lovely little draw back in, and I'm including my own county Leash in that one as well.
We've seen most of the country, but it was a decent draw.
To put it mildly. Come here, the Down match last year, weren't the Ballybay lads in some car crash or something on the way to that game? Was that a big thing made out of nothing, or what was that?
It's screw legs. No, there's just I was actually driving the car, and it was harmless, to be honest. I think a couple of days after it, there's one's been airlifted and everything in the hospital, but it was just caught a bit of grass and into the hedge, but there's no injuries or no damage or anything, so the cars or anybody else or anything like that. So it was just a mad story, mate, because it was just the car was in the way to the game, and we just got a lift after that, you know what I mean. The car was being pulled out, so
okay.
I see everybody seeing the car before going to the game, thinking, I think there's all sorts of stories coming out, so
yeah.
Everyone is grand. There's nothing serious. You know yourself how stories start.
I know too well, but I'd say the four of you look sweet standing on the side of the road in your gear and your bags with the car being pulled out.
Owen Lennon's flicker, he came shortly after, so they're all right. We weren't hanging about too long.
Okay, that's not too bad. Come here, talking about your year, you have to admit, whether you want to be modest or not, you've had an unbelievable year yourself, and like it's probably between yourself and Bon Gallagher for an All-Star. Like you marked some of the best players in the game, Geaney, Lee Brennan, Ian Burke, Neil Flynn, and did well on all of them. So like, I mean, you must be delighted with your own year.
I don't really like talking about myself, but I suppose that wasn't bad. As you name some of the players there, and probably going into some of the games, I probably wasn't supposed to be marking them. Just I had in my head to be marking somebody else, and it's probably the best way to be going into some of those games, because I know against Geaney I wasn't supposed to be on him at all. I think they made a late change or something, and it just happened to be
Donaghy started, wasn't that it?
Thank you. I wasn't going to mark Donaghy, you have to just wait. it just happened, and it probably was maybe but players like that, if you're, I know you look into videos now, but a player of Geaney's quality, like you could watch videos of him all day and you'd nearly be terrified going into the game, whereas I'd sort of only seen clips of him and I knew how good he was, and thankfully I suppose I've done alright in him, but just I don't know, I was just happy enough for the game, because probably the previous year I wasn't sort of happy with my performance, and a couple of league performances I wasn't too happy with. So just between the league and the championship, I sort of just knuckled down and just had a few games myself, but I can't really pinpoint it. Right?
Yeah.
But I thought it's nice though, you know, you sort of, when you play well, you can sort of relax that night and maybe just have a bottle or two and sort of relax.
Yeah, well, your conscience is clear that you've done your part, I suppose. That's kind
of
it.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, go on.
I just need to get off the other end and try to get a score or two. That's what I need to do now.
But you have license for that, right? You're in Monaghan, any of you can go whenever you want. No, are you given that? Are you told you're the main man marker and you can't?
Oh,
budge?
No, there's a chance to go. I'm probably the one that's be given out to better not backing off. But
yeah.
No, if there's no real. And like the way we have it, like there's no real, like we're not robots, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, we've been told that go out and play. Like I think people think that with all these defences that everybody's a robot, but you just sort of play the game in front of your eyes, and you know, like there is going to be times. Like I remember Mark and some of those players, and you know that there's nobody in front of you. There could be 40 yards space. And go, geez, I'm going to be in trouble here. But you just have to man enough and say, here's a one-on-one battle here, and if they get the better of you, fair and well, or if I get the better, so that's just life. So
yeah,
Malaghy says that if a man gets a score on you, there's no harm done, you just have to get to the next ball. So that's where I just like to maybe make an old parade off the field and see what's going on up that side.
Yeah, well, you rattle him straight away because he has to follow you, and then he's puffing and panting by the time you get back down. So like, I mean, it's a tactic.
Yeah.
It's a tactic in itself, attacking, really, even if you never get the ball.
Yeah, well, it's not sort of a known tactic. I suppose you just sort of go up, and I suppose if they follow me, it's just you're in danger, I suppose, if they don't follow you. But the way it is, there's normally good understanding with ourselves. It's about a good few years have played together now for a while, so normally people will drop in if somebody didn't drop back. But I suppose there's no point being conservative too. Like, there's time enough. You'll be long enough not playing to be sitting back and all that sort of thing. Might as well go and make a game of it.
Yeah, well, that's true. Come here, have you had time to look at these new proposals? Because these are going to completely change cornerbacks' roles.
To be honest, I don't know where they're going with some of them, to be honest, Colin.
Right.
They just seem a bit mad. Like, I don't know, is there anything wrong with the kickouts at the minute? Like, or I don't know. Like, I haven't really understood some of them. But like the hand pass rules, like three hand passes. Just seen a video on Twitter the other day that Cara Finn goal from the club championship was 6 or 7 passes.
Yeah.
One of the best goals you see all year. Like, I don't think these are the biggest problems maybe in the game at the minute, but that's, obviously they have to go and try something new. But some of them just seem, I don't know, with like in club games, like one referee will come to a game, he might not have an umpire with him, never mind more linesmen. How are they going to police it? You know, with the ball going into the 20 metres line and or the kickouts, like it's nearly going to be like another square ball. Oh, he was in before the ball went in, and all this sort of nonsense. So I think it's just going to be very hard to police, because there's no point trialing it into county level if they're not going to implement it at club level where all the football is being played.
It'll have to go. But would you be fair enough, even if you, while you don't agree with some of the proposals, would you be of the side that thinks that some changes need to be made to reduce the amount of hand passing, or would you think that you're happy enough with the way it's going?
Yeah, I suppose that's fair. Like, you know, the fair play and stuff does have to be like the, I suppose, like the mark rule in midfield has been a huge success, whereas people probably at the start said, oh no, there's no need for that. So
yeah,
Rodgers is something, and there's a game in Derry there, there's a huge criticism there recently. So obviously when you see something like that, there has to be something about it, there has to maybe be so many people left up for or something. But to be honest, I haven't sort of sat down myself and sort of thought through what needs to be done here. Like, you probably agree with yourself. With Monaghan this year, we've been probably involved in a few crackers, and with Tyrone twice, and even that Kerry game was the right game. And I thought that even that Galway game, I know both teams, well, we played defensively, but I thought that there was some good attack and play on show as well, even though there was defensive. So I don't think it's as bad as people are making out. Like, everyone's mad, they just drive their nail into Gaelic at the minute, because Gaelic or Horland's driving so much. But there's no point coming out with maybe 5 or 6 changes and changing the game completely within a year. Like, maybe I just thought five proposals to come out with.
Five, yeah.
I know they'll not all pass through, well, hopefully not, but I just think it's all a bit too much maybe at one go.
Come here, I was looking through FC Drew's Twitter. His Twitter is a bit like John Heslin, so he's an out and out farmer, likes to take a few pictures of cows.
I don't think it's as bad as John.
No, he's not on his level, but
John's getting a bit of slag in there, but yeah, he does a wee bit. We all do a wee bit, but Drew, myself and Brent and Kyle, we're all in Dublin, so Drew does get home the full time, so he works at DSB, and then he's full time at DSB and then part time farming in the evening. So keeps him crack. He's some good followers there now, but you don't see the half of them.
Is that the family farm, or do you all help out?
Family farm, dad's farm, so he works as well as part time as well. But no, it's good out of distraction there now before games and stuff. Say if you're playing for Sunday and you go up and do a small Saturday, if Drew was on here he'd probably say I don't do too much, but I do my share. But no, it's Drew, I'd say that'd be probably Drew's gym work, to be honest.
Really?
I wouldn't think
Drew needs much gym work.
Yeah,
he's just a big man.
More, whatever strength you see, Drew, it's more brooding than anything.
Come here, but you're a radiographer. You're in the Matter, are you?
Yeah.
Right, okay. I was actually reading a quote from you. I thought it was a good one. You were saying the Monday after a game you go into work, or maybe it's the Tuesday by the time you go in, you won't be working this Monday, I'm sure. But you say win or lose, there's always somebody in a worse position than me, and you look at them and there's no point in worrying about the game too much. And I suppose when you work in a hospital, that's a kind of a nice perspective to have on it.
Yeah, I suppose I wouldn't be overly frontline as maybe some of the doctors and nurses, but sort of see some bad cases. But yeah, obviously football, when you're stuck in the middle of it, is the be all and end all. But I suppose just when you take a step back, you just have to realise that there probably is going to be people worse off than you. But as I say, I'm not in the mad front line of it, so I'd say people see a lot worse than me. But it's good to nearly just to keep, just have something to keep you grounded, if you know what I mean, because just to be doing something, you know what I mean, keeping your head sort of taken over. You know, if I think you'd have your head demented if you're just laying at home all day.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right, well listen, come here. I was actually reading Ballybay, it's not the biggest town in the world, but it has 22 pubs, so I'm sure you'll be doing a bit of a crawl on Monday.
Oh, no, unfortunately it's half now.
Oh, they're gone, the recession.
Yeah, you're whatever art you're in, unfortunately, it's a bit old now. That would have been a good pub crawl at Christmas now, 22 pubs.
22 pubs at Christmas.
Unfortunately, I think it's 10 or 11 now, so it's still a hefty number for a small town, but I'd say either way on Monday, I'd say we'll give them all a good lash.
Yeah, well listen,
hopefully with a cup.
Exactly, hopefully with a cup. I'll be saying the same thing to Kieran Hughes, so I'm playing both sides here. So Kavir Ryan, thanks very much for taking the call, and best of luck in the county final.
Dead on, cheers, thanks very much.
Great stuff from Ryan there. That's all we've time for this week. We'll be back on Monday as usual with a review show of all the club action at the weekend. Right, good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.